You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Curtain Up Theater people, and welcome to your program, Is Your Ticket. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. The program, Is Your Ticket, is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, your program, Is Your Ticket, is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater and smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and it's our goal on this show to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. My guests on tonight's show are writer, director, and Emmy-winning actor Dorothy Lyman, and actor Abigail Hawk from the upcoming play In the Bleak Midwinter, making its theatrical debut here in New York City at Shetler Studios Theater 54 from September 8th to September 23rd. In the Bleak Midwinter is written by and stars Dorothy Lyman, who was also a highly accomplished director and two-time Emmy Award-winning actor. Known for such television hits as Mama's Family, All My Children, for which she won her back-to-back Emmy Awards, how cool is that, and The Nanny, in which she not only acted, but directed 75 episodes. It's so amazing. We also have esteemed actor Abigail Hawk, who also stars in The Bleak Midwinter, and she has a multitude of credits and currently stars in the CBS mega hit Blue Bloods. Ms. Hawk also has a Buford International Film Festival Best Actress nomination, and she has won the Hill Country Film Festival Best Actress Award, as well as the Golden Door Film Festival Best Actress Award, wow, that's awesome, for her role in the 2016 film Almost Paris. Okay, here's a description of In the Bleak Midwinter. It's a freezing Catskill winter outside on Gladstone Farms, and pretty frosty inside the farmhouse kitchen as well. As three generations of women debate the fate of their matriarch, a holiday weekend with family becomes a fulcrum for change as recently widowed Elizabeth Gladstone, played by Dorothy Lyman, faces old age and the loss of her home. Betsy, her daughter, played by Ms. Hawk, and granddaughter, Liz, played by Jean Lauren Smith, each have their own ideas about what should happen. Betsy wants to cash out. Liz wants to try to hang onto the farm. Tempers are as short as the winter days. But for Elizabeth, the only real question is, can the third act of her life really be the best one yet? Wow, that's wonderful themes and sounds so intriguing, and I can't wait to see it. But for now, let's bring on these two megawatt talents. Hi, ladies, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Hey, Sean.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, indeed.
It's my pleasure. And as I told you before, I'm a little overwhelmed. I'm so honored to be in the company of like such prestigious actors and directors behind. I mean, okay. I'm going to pull it together here.
Thank you.
Dorothy.
You're making us blush.
So great to hear.
Oh, no, I'm blushing probably more. But Dorothy, please tell us how the idea for In the Bleak Midwinter came to you. How did you come up with the premise, the character? Characters, the plot line. Can you talk about that a little bit for me, please?
Well, sure. You know, I wrote my first play in 1995, and I wrote my second play in 2016. So there was quite the split between them. And this is actually the third play that I have written. And, you know, I feel women are underserved generally, and certainly old women are in theater. You know that our voices are often silenced, and younger writers are not really interested in writing our stories. Mm-hmm. So just as in my career as a producer and director, I have tried to encourage women on my creative teams and technical teams, I have made it my personal mandate that I'm going to create great roles for myself and all my out-of-work wonderful actor woman friends.
Good for you.
So I am 71 now, and I live on a farm in upstate New York, and my children think it's time for me to get off that farm. So I've put it on the market, and I've moved down to my son's outfit in Connecticut. But I had so much grief in leaving my beautiful farmstead that I'd bought in 2001 and spent, you know, 17 happy years on as a chicken farmer. Actually, I raise eggs and I have horses. And so when the kids persuaded me that it was maybe time to move closer to New York City, closer to the family, I felt I was missing my grandkids' lives. You know, they live in New York City and in Connecticut. So anyway, a year ago I started making the move, and now I am fully in Connecticut. And so I wrote this play while I was down in Mexico this winter, I tend to run away from the cold for a couple months and go down to San Miguel de Allende. And I started this play down there last February to try to come to terms with my own feelings of loss. Wow. About aging and having to sell my farm.
Wow. And so tell me about the characters. Tell me about...
The characters are the old farmer. Mm-hmm. And her daughter that Abigail plays, by the way, so beautifully.
I mean, because the words
it's so great to work with her every day.
Thank you, Dorothy.
And her husband, my son-in-law, supposedly, and my granddaughter, and her fiancé. And the sixth character in the play is the local woman who's my kind of housekeeper slash caretaker, helps me around the farm, and, you know, has been kind of running the place with me since my husband died. So those are the six characters.
Wow. Yeah. And I would assume that the main character is based, because of the fact that you say it sounds a little bit, well, it sounds autobiographical, about 20, 30, 35% autobiographical, and then you've taken the story into a place where it's servicing the themes and the messages that you want to put forth.
Exactly. You know, I am a small, very small-time hobby farmer, but I bought my farm from some people who are fourth and fifth generation dairy farmers up there. Mm. So in the 17 years that I've lived in the Catskills in upstate New York, I have gotten to know those people and their stories. So actually, I have sort of cannibalized my neighbors' stories.
Yeah.
And blended them with my own emotional feelings. But, you know, Gladstone Hollow that I write about is a real place, you know, and... the stories about the animals and the cows and the stuff that happens on a farm are things that I've heard from my neighbors. And so I hope there is an authenticity to this beyond my own personal grief.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There's definitely an authenticity to it. It's a beautiful, beautiful journey. It really is. And it's just so relatable. I think that all of us, regardless of what our background is, whether it's farming or not, we are all going to have this conversation with a parental unit, or we are already that parental unit that is the recipient of those kinds of life-changing decisions. So it's just so incredibly present. I mean, it's a universal thing. Family drama is something everyone understands.
Oh, sure, yeah. My friend, playwright Howard Margolies, he tells me that he likes living rooms when he writes. He likes families in living rooms just playing it out, because you get such a nice insight into how similar your family is, even if it is, you know, whether it's a farm family or it's a city family.
Right.
Everybody is going through the exact same things on a certain level.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Abigail, tell me about your character.
Oh, so Dorothy has given me this beautiful gift of playing Betsy. Betsy's a fireball. She's a lot of things wrapped up into one. She's a very tense individual. She may possibly suffer from resting bitch face. She's very corporately driven. She is very much on track with her 80-hour work weeks to retire early. She wow. got having her kid out of the way very early. She had her kid at 22. That's Liz, played by Jean Lauren Smith. And she is just ready to move on and retire to Florida and just kick back. So she's charged and coming right out of the cannon ready to go, and then she's going to scale back. But part of her ability to scale back involves getting her mom off this damn farm and down, you know, into Florida or in a home where she belongs and doesn't have to worry about her, because it's a 3-hour drive from New York City. So having her up here alone is terrifying. And, you know, Betsy doesn't like it. She's a control freak. She wants to know when everything is happening. She is strategic. She is on time. She's never late, you know, and there are 25 hours in her day, and she gets it all done. Wow. Through her Ambien addiction. She's fascinating, and I have found throughout this entire process, I've been fortunate enough to be involved since the reading that was in April. She just is so very complicated, and I think that that is due to Dorothy servicing women so well. She is truly, you know, I see so much of myself in her, but I find that, I don't know, I think there's something about women writing for women. You know, we have many women that revolve in the universe of our own brain. I think that depending on, you know, what time of the month it is, we can be a completely different individual. Hmm. And Dorothy has written Betsy that way. And so I've noticed throughout this rehearsal process, different things come out for me, and I'm just so loving the process of discovery. You know, she's just all over the place, and it's beautifully messy.
Has Dorothy written components into your character that have made you realize, wow, I guess I'm like that a little bit sometimes every once in a while?
Oh, most definitely. Too. I think.
Like surprises for you.
Well, I think what's interesting is, especially in my journey as an actress, you know, we tend to see ourselves a certain way. We see our types a certain way. And I am learning as I get older that I don't necessarily match with what I think my type is. Huh. You know, I'm a very forceful individual. I come across very confident and, you know, I put my whole self out there. I've never met a stranger, but I feel that myself, as opposed to my actress persona, is not that. You know, I think that I'm fairly reticent, and I enjoy my alone time. So it's just, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've lost track of the question a little bit, but that's Betsy. So there you go. So yes, most of me is there. We're the same person.
it sounds like there are power themes in the story.
Oh gosh.
Am I pegging that pretty correctly? Like it's like who has the power in the family, and when, and who wants it, and who needs it, and who really should have it? Can you speak on that?
Well, exactly, you know, and I think with the death of the patriarch, you know, the family really lost its compass, and his wife, Lisbeth, who I play, has tried to keep everything going along as if Hank never died, and that's not real, and that's not true, and that's not in anybody's best interest. Mm. You know, when you said that Howard Margolese,
yes.
Howard Margolese said he loved living rooms, I love kitchens. And
yes.
I realized that since A Couple of White Chicks Sitting Around Talking, which was the first play I ever produced and directed in 1980 by John Ford Noonan,
mm-hmm.
Every major success in my career that I've had as a writer or director has been set in my own kitchen in one way or another. So it's a very strong power base for me, and I think for most women. It's the heartbeat of the home. It's the hearth. It's, you know, where food is cooked, where people are nourished, where secrets are told.
Wow. That's
Listen, cool. Even as someone who doesn't cook actively, that would be myself, the kitchen is where everyone ends up.
Right?
Because that's where the coffee is.
That's right. Or the wine,
or the
ice cubes, or whatever
yes.
you need.
Yes.
Exactly.
Or the kids' snacks.
Exact.
And, of course, there's the old adage that the kitchen is the focal point of every party
yes.
that you go to. It's where you go. Where it's like it's almost like its own little confessional for
Agreed.
Everyone.
That's
in a way.
That's a great
great way to put it.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Now, you mentioned that you had a reading in April.
Yes.
So you've had a reading. Have you done any other like workshops, or have there been any other developmental productions of the show?
When I... the two young people in this play come with me in the winter down to San Miguel and have worked with me twice down there. So when I wrote the first 28 pages of this play in February, Brennan and Jeannie were still down in Mexico, so we did a reading of it there in February. Then I wrote more on it, and when it was 44 pages, we read it here in New York, and that's when Abigail and Tim Bone joined Jeannie and Brennan and I and Shannon Stowe, who plays the housekeeper, and we read it in April for an audience. Who reacted very well to it and had ideas, and so I made it 54 pages long. And in June, we met for
two days
mm-hmm. at my apartment in the Walk here in New York, and we sort of workshopped it. We just spent 2 days just reading through over and over and talking about each scene and talking about the characters and talking about the relationships, and I listened to everybody's ideas and I made notes, and I took the month of July to retool the play so that it would be ready when we went into rehearsal on August 8th. And I took all of the ideas that I'd gotten in those 2 days' work in June. And it became 62 pages. And that Wow. was the production that we put into motion. You know, it's a process. It's a collaborative art, really, theater. And, you know, the writer gets to take credit for all these great ideas, but many of them spring out of the discussions that you have with the actors while you're exploring the script, which, especially with a new text, even as a director, when it's not my own text, I like to spend the first week just sitting around a table just talking about it, you know, making sure everybody understands exactly what they're saying. And as a director, it gives me a chance to actually kind of block it in my head so that when we get it on its feet, it goes up really quite naturally.
Yep. She, I just want to sing her praises. You know, I know they get sung all the time, but she's been so incredibly open and collaborative to new ideas, to different takes on certain things. She really has let us play with her play, and it's been very inspiring. I haven't touched theater since 2011, and so this has been slightly scary for me to re-immerse myself in this world that, unfortunately, you know, my muscle memory is kind of disappearing because I've been in this world of television and film for the last, you know, 7 to 10 years of my life,
sure.
Working professionally, and it's been such an honor to feel that I am truly part of a team with these incredibly capable people alongside me. And the beautiful thing about Dorothy is that she never lords it over you that she is the creator. You know, she's, even though her words feel divinely appointed, she just is so humble and honest and present in everything. I really feel that way very strongly.
Wow, Abby.
Well,
love you back.
Can she be in my next play?
I know it.
Gosh.
You know, I refer to people as the Lyman family players.
She
you
does.
Know,
that's great.
The ones that I have worked with before. This is the third project that I've worked with Brennan Lowry and Jean Lauren Smith on. And, you know, it. I like to work and write for people that I know, you know, that I know who they are inside and out and what they can do, and yeah, it's great.
That's amazing. So tell us about the rest of your team. Now, you mentioned a couple of the other actors. Tell me about your creative team, your tech team. Talk about them a little bit.
Well, I invited a protege of mine called Katie McHugh. She was a student of mine like 8 years ago. I taught at the New School for 6 years, the New School for Drama, and Katie was in the master's degree program.
Wow.
And so she was one of my students there, and we just, she really got it about me, and we just became really good friends, and she and I have worked together for the last 6 years on every theater project I've done. She usually produces for me and or is the technical director, and she is so great. Mm-hmm. She has her own theater company, and she's got many things on her own plate, but... You know, I invited her to be part of this project because, you know, I just couldn't write and direct and be in it and be the prop mistress and just do everything. You know, I really needed her help. So she came on, even though I think sometimes working with somebody is a... you know, strong-headed and specific as I am about how things need to go, it's probably been a little frustrating for her, but, you know, she's done a great job. And plus, she's 8 months pregnant, so the baby's going to be born like 10 days after the play opens. So we're, you know, just looking at that child as a sort of symbol of our own.
She's a superhero.
She is. Yes, she's a superhero, I mean, for sure.
Yes, I'd already delivered both of my children where she is in her pregnancy because I delivered 5 weeks early. So the fact that she's still hanging on, you know, she's a champ.
Yeah, and she has, we've assembled a design team of a young woman, Joanna Pan, who's in her final year at Tisch at NYU. She's getting her master's in theater design there. A wonderful lighting designer called Elizabeth Mack, and my good old friend James Higgins, who, you know, the only man on the team, is the sound designer, and he's done the sound for me for the last couple of projects I've done, and he's just great. He's a great singer and a great musician and like that. So
that's terrific.
I know it. And, you know, Katie's husband runs Shetler Studios. Yeah, Robin Patterson, who's the managing director here at Shetler. So it's a very family-oriented situation, and we feel really good about it. And we hired two, you know, very talented young administrators, a stage manager and a production manager, Megan Shadler and Natalie
Jones,
who are, you know, on the production team, plus a wonderful girl called...
Brenna and Brennan. That's been some difficulties on our rehearsal.
She moved to New York 2 weeks ago and immediately began to work with us. So she's kind of, it's amazing to watch her. And
yes,
she's just taken to it all like a duck to water. So that's the team putting this thing on.
That's great. It's so smart, I think, to bring in people that you've worked with before, that you have good rapport with. It's because the trust has to be there. Not just in, I think, the art, but also in the responsibility of, you know, showing up on time and doing, learning your lines and knowing that if you ask for a lighting schematic or a sound plan, that if you want it tomorrow, then you're going to get it tomorrow. So that's, in my opinion, that's so smart, and that's the best way to develop a team.
You know, my daughter runs Martin Scorsese's outfit, Emma Tillinger Koskoff, and Marty has had the same editor for every, you know, Thelma's cut everything he's ever shot. And it's, as a director or producer, when you find a posse that works well with you,
your
that
inner
delivers
circle.
The mm-hmm. goods, you hire these people over and over again, you know. And, It makes sense because they know your rhythms, they know your personality, they're, you know, put up with your moods.
It's like I said, it's just really smart. I do the same thing. I at least try to get the same people I can whenever I have a project, mm-hmm. as I've had before. It doesn't always work out that way because everyone has their own projects going on and schedules, but if you can, then that's great. It sounds like you have a lot of a loyalty to you, and people have a lot of loyalty to you from your one team, I'm going to say. I mean, it's so rare that, like, one team will, like, stay. So that's props to you, Dorothy Lyman.
Thank you.
That's terrific. Now, you had mentioned sort of shaking off the cobwebs of TV and film acting. Now, can I indulge you with one of the questions that a lot of the fans and people that I talk to about my guests on your program is Your Ticket ask me. May I?
You may.
Okay, good. Okay.
We're here. Let's
okay,
do
excellent.
It.
Now, people always ask me when I have guests on who are in TV and film, what is the difference between acting in the theater and acting for the screen for TV and film? What kinds of what techniques do you use that are different, or what's the approach? Is there a volume level that's different? I mean, it's probably the most common question I get asked.
Well, that's probably the most immediate and ready answer is that, yes, the volume level is light years different. I mean, with TV and film, the camera and the boom miss nothing. So if you're not honest, the camera knows you are not honest. But to the other side, it also allows you to be just subtle. It reads everything. You can do nothing and the camera will pick up your face, the smallest eye twitch or lip quiver, and the audience is able to make of that what they will. I think with theater, typically, even in a very intimate black box space like Theater 54 is, you have to project more automatically because you don't have a boom. You don't have a lav. We're not wearing lav mics. And that's just very jarring for me because a lot of these conversations are so intimate and you have to rev up the volume but not lose that intimacy. So that's a big difference for me. And also, you know, the hardest thing for me is going back to the technical discipline with theater. Finding the energy and the stamina to sustain that character's arc and journey from start to finish every single night and revving up and doing those emotional traveling over and over and over again, and you know, having to navigate it if it's not there with your training, which we talked about the other day. You know, sometimes you don't feel like crying, you don't feel like yelling, but you've got to push through and make it as honest as possible. Whereas in TV and film, you just go, cut, that take was terrible for me, let's do it again.
Wow.
And you can move on. And you also learn the lines instantly. You lay it down. And then if it's not great, you fix it in post. Hurrah. So it's, you know, it's like having Photoshop. But you don't get that in theater.
You know, for me as a director, the actor only has to do it right once when you're shooting it. In the theater, the actor has to reproduce it 8 times a week.
Sure.
You know, and even the great actors don't feel it 8 times a week, and that's when the actor's technique kicks in. How can you still make us believe that you're upset, even if you're not really upset tonight? But as a director, I love working in film because every audience member sees the same performance.
Yes.
Every time the film is shown, it's exactly the same. You're not in the hands of the actors or an understudy or, you know, whatever happens. So as a director, for me, you know, film is a great medium.
Wow.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Yeah, there's lots to unpack there. I mean, there's so many little nuances and differences, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But for me as an actor, there's no difference between how I work on a role in the theater and how I work on a role on film. The same investigation, the same substitutions, the same all those things...
oh, agreed, yes.
You know, go into it. So there's no difference in how you approach the work.
So it really is about just adjusting
the execution,
right? Your performance to the
size.
Media,
mm-hmm.
The size.
Mm-hmm.
That's a
mm-hmm.
great mm-hmm. word for it. Well, thank you for answering the audience's question. That's great. That's a wonderful answer. And sometimes I wonder myself too. And my husband's an actor, and he's been on film, and so.
Oh.
Yeah, but he'll just, you know, he's. He won't answer things like that with me around. With me, it's like, you know, what do you want for dinner? And that's it. So there you go.
How many years?
We've been together for 27 years.
Oh,
and we've
mazel tov.
Thank you. And we've been married for 10.
Congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
That's a really big deal.
Yeah, it certainly is.
I've been
is.
Married for 9, so you're still beating me.
Yeah. And I've been married many times.
So. Oh, my gosh. I could talk to you two for hours and hours and hours. I know you have other commitments today. You have
a rehearsal
today. So, but before we go, would either of you or one of you like to share your information about the upcoming production of the In the Bleak Midwinter, or if you have any social media information you'd like to share, or if there's any upcoming thing that you'd like to talk about? I'm sure it's all under wraps, that kind of thing. But
sure. No, we have a website, and I believe it's called Stuffed Olive Inc., INC. And there also, if you type in the Bleak Midwinter play, you'll get somewhere.
Yes. Google will lead you.
And if you do even Dorothy Lyman, I think you would be led in some way.
Yes.
But I'm, as I say, not young and conversant with these social media things. Although, you know,
but I am.
There you go.
I am. I was sort of dragged onto Twitter very recently because I was fundraising for a wonderful organization called Covenant House. So I'm now on Twitter, which is, I've joined 2018. I'm still relevant.
Thank you for following me today.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. I saw that.
So my Twitter handle is Abigail Hawk. My Instagram handle is Hawk Abigail, because apparently there's another Abigail Hawk. So you have to put my last name first with Instagram. And then I'm on Facebook as well, so all of the information outside of the Stuffed Olive Inc. website is also on my pages.
Cool.
And for me, you know, I'm focused on Blue Bloods and on In the Bleak Midwinter, and I have a film that's upcoming next spring with Lawrence Fishburne and Milo Gibson called Brother's Keeper that will be coming out, so that's in post right now. So that's me.
Sensational. Dorothy, you have anything coming up, or is this...
Well, I'm guest starring on The Blacklist, and I work on Monday. You know, it's a nice guest star part. I get to shoot somebody and be shot. So
wow.
I'm looking forward to that.
That's great.
And I also have a guest starring part on the on a new series, and the pilot episode is called FBI. It's a new Dick Wolf series, which stars Missy Peregrine. And,
I love her.
Yeah.
I like Missy Peregrine a lot. Well... Thank you so much for being with us, writer and also star Dorothy Lyman, and her co-star, actor Abigail Hawk, of In the Bleak Midwinter. It's been an honor, and I so appreciate you being with me, and I wish you totally figurative broken legs, like as many as possible. Just, you know, have a great time doing the show. Enjoy it. It sounds so wonderful, and I absolutely can't wait to see it.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you. We look forward to welcoming you to the theater.
Yeah. It's my pleasure. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Don't forget to see In the Bleak Midwinter, playing at the Shetler Studios Theater 54 from September 8th to September 23rd, and I believe September 8th is opening night. Did I read that correctly?
You did. Yeah.
I did. Great. As for me, you can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket at Facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket, as Abigail knows. Again, thank you for following me. That's why I'll follow you back. I promise. I swear. My website is YourProgramIsYourTicket.com. A quick thanks to North Coast NYC, the hip-hop improv theater ensemble that does my intro and outro music. You might be hearing it right now. If not, you'll hear it in a few seconds. They're awesome. Your Program Is Your Ticket is on iTunes and SoundCloud. Please rate me and write me a review, subscribe, all of that stuff helps my profile, and I totally appreciate it. Folks, take a little time to see a show this week, and don't forget to give a smaller show some love. There's lots of theater gems out there. Until our next show, good night, theater people, and curtain.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.